Welcome to the Digital Families Podcast. I'm Leonie Smith. I'm a digital family parent coach and educator, and this podcast is all about learning how to use the digital technology in our homes with more safety and balance. My guest today is Josh Langley. Josh Langley was told he would amount to nothing in life, having failed high school twice and being unemployed for several years. But that didn't stop Josh from becoming a multi-award winning radio copywriter and award-winning children's author. Now he's groundbreaking children's books, programs, and school talks on self-acceptance, resilience, understanding emotions, and kindness are helping thousands of kids make friends with themselves. We want to hear all about that. Josh, welcome to the Digital Families Podcast.
Thank you for having me, Leonie. I'm really looking forward to this chat. It's a great introduction too. Thank you.
You're welcome and well-deserved. You've got quite a story, Josh, but you describe yourself with this headline. This is what I saw on your website. From high school failure to award-winning author and illustrator. Why did you see yourself as a failure in high school?
Because I failed. I really did not get the marks to go to anywhere after high school. But one of the things I think looking back now is that I just really didn't like it. I just didn't like going to high school. I didn't connect with it because, you know, this is back in the 80s, Leonie, when it was really the idea of education at that time was lines on the board, recite the lines, trying to remember as much as you could, and then get assessed on how much you could remember and regurgitate. And to me, that just, how was I going to learn that way? I just could not get it. And I spent a lot of time wagging school, especially year 11 and 12. Yeah. And I think it was in year 11 or year 12, I did maths one, and during the exam at the end of the year, I just felt more compelled to write poetry in the maths exam.
Yeah.
Because that's sort of what I connected with. And also looking back, maybe there was a few, I had trouble learning, you know, especially the conventional way of learning. Maybe a bit of undiagnosed dyslexia at the time. But I just really, because if you fail high school, it really says to the world, you are a failure, because the whole premise is you go to high school, then you go to university, then you go get a job, and there's a whole progression that's laid out for you. But if you skip that one core bit, which is passing high school, then you're stuffed the rest of it. And so that's how I felt at that time.
That says a lot about your expectations, you know, because technically I failed high school as well, but I didn't ever feel like I failed because I actually peaked in year 11. I did really well in year 11, and that's been a pattern through my entire family, and bombed out in year 12 because I just, like you, I couldn't see the point in it, and I just partied, basically.
Yes,
but my fallback was that I wanted to go to art school, and I knew that I could do that without having a pass in the HSC, but I didn't see myself as a failure. So where were those expectations coming from, Josh, that you –
I suppose when I was growing up, even though I was a very dysfunctional family, it was both parents were highly educated. They were both professionals.
Yeah.
And so it was that untold expectation that you were going to high school and then that you would then go to university. There was no point in going to high school if you weren't going to go to university.
Yeah.
And then you're going to get a good degree in something, and then, you know. And so when I didn't get that, even though that I'd lowered my expectations, I thought, well, really I wanted to do media, get into media somehow, so do one of the media courses. But so when I didn't get into that, it was like, oh. And of course I was comparing myself to all the expectations of everyone around me, all my friends, they're all going to university, they're all doing those sort of subjects, those sort of that trajectory. But I didn't know anyone who was going to get a trade or become a brickie or anything like that. And that wasn't really an option. That wasn't told to me. And so with this gap, it's sort of like, so I ended up just getting a job at a dog's refuge home after high school. Yeah. And just, you know, making big vats of mints and hosing out dog poo. And so that's where I thought, well, that's me. That's my role in life.
Because when I went through high school, a lot of people still left in year 10. And I went to a public high school. So, in fact, less people went on to year 11 or 12. It was more acceptable. And I actually think that's a real shame that it still doesn't continue, because there's a lot of kids out there that aren't necessarily academic. They aren't going to need all that stuff they teach you for the HSC, and they'd actually do a lot better leaving in year 10, getting a trade or working in an area where they're learning from mentors rather than sticking it out at school.
Yeah, I mean, look, I speak to a lot of teachers and, you know, they all quietly say to me, the HSC is, and the TE over here, it's just, or the ATAR, is just pointless. It is just sets kids up to fail. Yeah. Whereas, you know, they go, why don't we use high school, at least the last 2 years of high school, and create a portfolio that then the kids can then take to university as opposed to all being assessed with one big test.
Yeah, that's a bit like the baccalaureate.
What's that one?
Okay, the baccalaureate is very much like that. So I've got a nephew who did that, and it for the last 2 years of high school, that's exactly what you do. You work on a project, and you present that project at the end of the year, and it's internationally recognised. So, you know, if you weren't living in COVID, for instance, you could present that and the results of that in order to get into a university internationally anywhere. This experience that you had and your journey, how did you get from feeling like you were a failure in high school to an author? I mean, what happened during that time that got you to that point?
You know, the funny thing is, Leonie, is I would love to say there was a magic moment when something switched, or there was someone who was a mentor who said, no, Josh, you can do this. You can achieve amazing things. But there was none of that. And it was a gradual process of just being unemployed, going through menial jobs, and had the government ended up paying someone to employ me. So I did that job. But it was a slow build-up of confidence again in my abilities and what I could do. And there was a certain element of disdain for traditional ways of life, like, you know, that progression, get a job, do all that sort of stuff, go get married. I really didn't like that whole concept. And so there was that little bit of that disdain. There was a building up of confidence. And then when I finally got a job in radio, and that gave me the confidence, because I'd found somewhere where I could express myself as a radio copywriter, and I could use my creative ideas and then sort of feel fulfilled in that way. Because it's like any other job I had, it was sort of, there was like a dead end job. I wasn't expressing myself. I was not being who I was. But as a copywriter, I was able to come up with all these crazy ideas and see them executed and see the results of them. And so I ended up writing ads for about 25 years and winning lots of awards. And it gave me that confidence to go, when I find what I really enjoy doing, which is expressing myself, what else could I do? Oh, I could write books. I could do illustrations. I could do that. So it gave me that slow progression, that slow confidence to do that.
Does your dyslexia ever, or your undiagnosed dyslexia, because I'm dyslexic as well. Yeah. Did that ever get in the way of your progress? Did you ever kind of think, I shouldn't be doing this because I'm not?
Oh, yeah. Because what would happen is that, couple that with anxiety, and my brain travels at a million miles an hour. My fingers are halfway, a street behind my brain. And then with the dyslexia, I would then swap words around. I would miss words out. So when I was writing radio scripts and I would have to be voiced by someone, I would always get the announcers complaining. They go, oh, it's another Josh Langley script. You've missed out this word. You swap that word. Or like when I've gone to edit something, like edit a sentence to change the tense of that, I would forget to change the tense in the first part, not the second part, or something like that. So it basically looked like a dog's breakfast, really. But and when they would come back and people would have a go at me, and I would have that feeling of, oh, maybe I shouldn't be doing this. Maybe I'm in the wrong space. But there was something still inside me which said, no, I actually enjoy this. Just keep going. And I used to do the whole thing.
So the ideas are there. The ideas are there. But actually doing it correctly, and I totally understand where you're coming from. That whole thing about tents, and it would take me, and still does, take me probably 20 times longer than anybody else has to write, even with spell check, because spell check at some times just says, okay, I'll give up. I don't know what the hell you're trying to say.
It's underlines like, the whole lot.
And, then what I have to do is go to Google and put it in Google, because Google is so good at trying to figure out what you're saying.
Exactly. I do the exact same thing. And then I second guess myself and I go, really? Even the word practice, like I usually write practice makes progress all the time. But I still have to go, which practice is it? Is it the one with the C S? And I think a lot of people do that. But it is literally, when you then have to second guess yourself, when you get beaten, like Facebook posts, I struggle posting on Facebook because I will literally edit.
Yes, I know.
And I'll still have a typo in it.
Do you know with Facebook you can look at the edits? There's a button that shows you how many edits. I don't think I want to see it. And for some of my posts, there's like 30, and I'm like, I hope no one's seen this. These constant edits.
And it is disheartening because I do beat myself up. I do go because it unearths a childhood of feeling not good enough.
Yes.
And that I shouldn't be in that space. Yes. I shouldn't be doing what I'm doing.
And school reports that say things like, you know, Josh is actually quite bright, but he just needs to work harder, that kind of stuff.
By himself. Yeah, concentrate. Yes. Stop daydreaming too much. All that
stuff. Stop daydreaming and stop talking in class, because people with dyslexia and anxiety often are the ones that chatter away in class because they're bored.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So it is. I just keep pushing on, and I look at I've written 9 books so far. You know, a whole bunch of adult books and the kids books, and there's still that element of I need to say what I need to say, and I'm going to do it regardless of how badly it's written or how many typos there are. And that's the good thing about having a publisher, because that will pick all that out and hopefully change it. Yeah. But I don't know, there's something inside me that just goes, I need to say it. And that helps me push through instead of crumbling into a heap all the time. I mean, I do still, but I still end up wanting to produce stuff.
So the technology has made it a lot easier, I think. I mean, I learnt very badly to touch type from the receptionist centre back in the 80s. But it has been such a useful skill, and it's probably one of the reasons I feel so comfortable with technology is that I can understand the technology. And I want to talk to you about technology and about your books and what you do, because, Josh, you're so much more than even than an author. You actually go around to schools, and a big part of your work is helping children to recognise their own worth. Just talk us through a little bit how you got into that and what you do as far as that side of things.
The story of how I started doing schools was quite interesting. It's sort of an example of how the universe just creates opportunities, and if you're there to grab it, then that will open up. I'd just written Being You Is Enough with my first kids book. And just by chance, I was still working at the radio station where I was then. And the Margaret River Readers and Writers Festival was coming up. And one of the sales reps was sort of trying to get them on board to spend some advertising. And during the conversation with the sales rep and the festival director, the festival director said, "Do you know anybody who's written a kids book? Because we want to add some more people to the to the kids lineup, the kids author lineup." And he went, "Yeah, I've just, one of the guys at the radio station has just written one called Being You Is Enough." And so got in contact, had a chat, and she said, "We're having a kids festival where we're getting 4 authors and we're going around to all the schools and they're going to talk about their books. Would you like to be part of it? And we'll pay you a couple of $1,000. And I went, "Okay, I can do that." It was the money that got me. And of course, I haven't been to school since primary school, since I was in primary school. But thankfully, my next door neighbor at the time was a school teacher. Mm-hmm. So I sat down with her and she gave me some tips on how to make a presentation. She said, got to make it interesting. You've got to have different elements to it. You've got to have a PowerPoint or whatever. You've got to have an interaction. You've got to do all that sort of stuff. So she helped me shape it. I got the core elements of the messages that I wanted to get across.
Mm.
And she said, you come to my school for free and do 6 sessions in a row. I'm going to throw you in the deep end. And I went, oh, okay. And I did it. And she said, you're a natural. This, you were just fantastic with the kids. They interacted with you. All the ideas went really, really well. And she said, I wouldn't change a thing. And so 2 weeks after that, I went on a tour of the southwest of WA, going to all the primary schools. Yeah. And I went, I can do this. And because you can make money from it, I thought, okay. So I then sort of factored in the school visits with what I do as the author. And then that just took off from there. And, you know, each year I get invited, for especially for book week, to touring around all the schools. But and I go to regional areas as well. And it's just, but it's delivering the message, which is different from other kids' authors, because I'm delivering
the self-acceptance. I was about to say that. So this isn't just about cute little books that, you know, Spot goes to the shop or whatever. They're a bit deeper than that. Your first book, which was, I'm scrolling down.
Being You Is Enough.
Being You Is Enough. And tell us about that and how that comes into your presentations with the kids and what that's about.
When I'd already had a few books published with the publisher, and they said, we're going to move into the kids book area and that we want you to write a kids book, because I'd written some illustrated books for adults and I don't have kids myself. So I was really stuck. Going, what do I do? What do I do? And then it suddenly dawned on me, well, why don't I write a book for my 8-year-old self? Because he had a fairly sort of traumatic upbringing. And I thought, yeah, that's what I'll do. And I'll keep it really simple, because my whole philosophy in life is keep things simple. So I thought, okay, what are the 12 most important things that my 8-year-old self should know about life? And so I just wrote it as just 12 tips. And it's just gone gangbusters since then. You know, there's elements of it's, you know, to use your, it's okay to use your imagination. It's okay to be different. You know, how to sense your emotions. It's okay to make mistakes. You know, that you are loved, you are enough. All these really core messages that kids don't often get to hear because they're too busy being taught maths and English and all that sort of stuff. So I thought, let's get this into a cute little book. It's actually not little. It's over at 100 pages. Because no one told me how to write a kid's book. They didn't tell me the average is 32. I went, no, I'm going to put everything I can into it. So it's like a little mini Bible for kids that they can pick up and read. And it's just the amazing thing. It's been picked up by so many kids who are neurodiverse or who have a disability or something. And it teaches them the self-acceptance because it's easy to read. They don't have to unpack a story or anything like that. It's just pick up a page, read it, and then put it down again, and they can start to feel better about themselves and who they are.
So you wrote this book for your 8-year-old self, and you obviously chose things that you would have loved to have heard or been aware of at that age. And how long ago did you write the book?
That was in 2016.
So having written the book all that time ago, do you think you've really taken it all on board now?
I think it's a process, Leonie. It is really a process. And what I find is that the more I take it, like I have certain slides from pages that spreads from the book that I take to primary schools. One of the funniest ones in there is even cool kids have to poo. And there's an illustration of a kid on the toilet and stuff like that. But that's about don't feel intimidated by other people who you think are more important than you or you're scared of and stuff like that. And so it's when I put that on the screen and I talk about that with the kids, as I talk to the kids, I'm still talking to myself. Yeah, I'm still absorbing that message. Exactly. And the more I do that, the more I feel I'm connecting with myself again. And as I'm connecting with the kids, I'm connecting with me. So, and I think that comes out. I think teachers look at the way I present, because I'm all over the shop. I'm running up and down. I'm getting excited with the kids and I'm really talking to them about these sort of topics. Yeah. And I'm connecting and I feel I connect because I'm connecting with myself. So each time I do it, it's sort of the whole, for me, the whole concept, as I heal myself, I'm healing other people. So I come first, and then other people, they hear the message and they can start to be healed as well. If that makes any sense.
Yeah, no, it makes perfect sense. And one of the things you must be seeing, Josh, and one of the things that teachers must be telling you is that in today's world of kids being connected online and getting onto social media younger and younger, they need to hear these messages more than ever, because we know that social media really does have the potential to rob kids of their self-esteem, to feel like they're always comparing with others on apps, that they're actually not enough unless they look like somebody else or they have some other kind of social media followers that other people have and all of that. And do you feel that the work that you're doing in school is also being propelled by that? And what kind of things are you seeing or hearing about in schools in regards to what that online space is actually doing to kids, particularly in primary schools?
Well, I think it's the upper primary school, it's the fives and sixes who shouldn't theoretically be on social media because you have to be 13 plus, but they are. I mean, I hear stories about 11-year-old girls who are on Instagram and they're following, you know, all their favorite models and singers and all that sort of stuff. And they look at those images and they have themselves said, oh, maybe I am not pretty enough. I'm not good enough. Mm. And to have an 11-year-old girl say that, wow, I don't know where you go with that. It's in my last one of my, not being wildly kind, but the book before that, Magnificent Mistakes and Fantastic Failures, I wanted to include a section about social media and how everything looks so perfect. I mean, look, even for adults, Leonie, we look at social media, we start to feel inadequate.
Absolutely.
As adults, we feel that, and kids have got no way of framing it. So that's why I put I should have had it here, but it's a picture of a beautiful girl on Instagram taking a beautiful picture, and then I pull out and the actual she's on the toilet having a poo.
The toilet and the poo again, Josh.
I know. There's a time. Well, you know what? Kids love it. And it's like I wanted to show that everything is an illusion. And how do we get kids to get back to themselves and that whole self-esteem thing of grounding within themselves, that those intrinsic values as opposed to extrinsic values, which is what, you know, we grow up looking out there going, that's going to make me happy. I need that person to accept me. I need to win that award. I need to win that race. I need to all that. When really it's coming down, how can we build up this intrinsic self-worth? And I suppose that's what I'm trying to do. And even though I don't directly touch on the social media stuff and the online stuff, it sort of informs the way I talk and the way I speak and the messages that I have. Because I don't have kids, I don't see what kids are doing. I only hear stories.
Yes.
And, you know, talking to people like Jeremy Kelpstein, who's creating this, the Empathy Initiative, where he was talking about the online space, really it doesn't teach empathy at all. Because it can be so competitive, especially with boys and gaming and stuff like that when they're playing Minecraft or whatever. And especially with all of the messenger apps, you know, WhatsApp and all that sort of stuff, where kids create groups and you can be excluded from a group and you can be included from a group. And kids don't want to switch off their messenger apps or their alerts. Like at 2 o'clock in the morning, they could get ding, 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 because they don't want to miss out on what their friend's doing. And all that sort of stuff creates this anxiety, and that leads on to the social anxiety where, you know, as you would know, kids spend so much time online when they have to go and order something from McDonald's, they don't know how to speak to people because they just go, I don't know, because they can't read facial expressions. They can't do all that.
You see,
sort
now
of
they've
stuff.
Got all these computers that places like McDonald's and Oliver's and stuff where you don't have to speak to anyone. You can just type in the little console
and you know what? I get so confused by that. Give me
so
a person.
So do I. And they don't work.
I know. And you're going, because for me, I don't know whether it's just the way I learned slowly. I look at and the whole thing seems overwhelming. So I need time to break down the images on the screen. Okay, now that's a burger. now which one do I press next? And I feel like an old man doing it because I don't want to suddenly have it all upsized and get 15 buckets of fries and nuggets. I just want one burger. Yeah, and everyone's right. Behind me going, hurry up, come on,
hurry up, get away. I know. It makes you feel inadequate and important. And what you're saying goes back to what you were saying at the beginning about expectations. So we're talking about kids also having those expectations. And one of the things that occurred to me recently when I was asked about an app that the developers wanted to do some they wanted to get some ideas from people like myself about what I thought about it. And again, it was another app that was all about kids sharing what they're doing and what they're building and all of that. And my biggest problem with that is that what we're talking about here is a kind of massive show and tell with no limits. Mm. So if we think about to when we were at school, Josh, where we had show and tell, some kid could get up in front of the class, lift up their skirt and say, "Mum bought me a new pair of underpants," and it would go no further than the classroom. Mm. And the teacher would very quietly, "Okay, that's enough, Josh. We don't want to see your Batman underpants today. Thank you very much. Next," and it was an controlled environment. Mm. Now we've got kids that are doing things like that and putting themselves in very vulnerable situations in one way or another where that we don't have those, we don't have, for a start, usually an adult supervising that space to be able to pull things back and control them. And it's gone crazy. And I think that comparison that you're talking about and the lack of not feeling good enough is such an important message at the moment. So I imagine that you've got a lot of schools reaching out to you saying, we're seeing this in kids because of kids being on social media and using messaging apps way earlier than their brains are able to really deal with, to the point where we're hearing about 7- and 8-year-old girls saying, "I'm too fat."
Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it? And that's now happening with boys as well. They're getting that message. They're looking at outside or whatever and going, "I don't have the right body. I'm not toned enough, or I'm too skinny." Yeah. And it's like, just be a kid. Go out and enjoy life. That's the sad thing is because adults, we're affected by the same thing. But it's happening to the kids. Whereas before, it maybe could have just been the adults and kids because it's just been kids. But no, it's happening to right across the board.
So what is your message to kids and to parents if they start to feel like that? If they do start to think, "I'm not good enough," or how do you switch that around in a child that you can see is clearly suffering from that feeling?
Look, getting to that point of self-acceptance, it does have to come from an adult to help a child discover that within themselves. But I find it sort of like, how can we get that child to uncover their superpowers? What's their own personal superpower? What do they like doing? What are they good at? And get them to explore that in that space. Because as you know, when you start to do things you're good at and you enjoy, you feel better about yourself and you can feel a little bit more confident and a little bit braver, and then you can more likely step out and do other things. I suppose it's repeating the messages about try and avoid comparing yourself to other people. How can you focus back on yourself and what can you do as the child, and what the parent can do to support that, and how the parent can just... I mean, not that I want to give, I don't give parenting advice because I'm not a parent. And the last thing I want is, what would I, if my little 8-year-old self was starting to get into that space, how would I deal with that little 8-year-old self? Is that try and show up for them as an understanding person, as instead of, lecturing or going, "Don't do this," or "Don't do," having that conversation, creating that safe space, have the conversation and get that kid to believe in themselves again. What can they do? What are they good at? What do they like doing? And then really nurturing that. So then they can see their own abilities and they don't have to keep looking outside of that to go further. If that makes sense.
It does make sense. And I know that it's really difficult for some parents because I think there's some interesting things happening that I see with parents. The parent that books their kid up for absolutely every single experience, whether it's sport, dance, music, or whatever, So that child has so many options in front of them, and they become this well-rounded, you know, child, and the child may or may not like what they're doing. And then the other parents that are so busy that the kid's left to themselves quite a lot, and often they might be the one that's, you know, on a computer in a dark room gaming the whole time. And then if the child decides they like something that you have no interest in at all, some parents find that really, really difficult. So one of the things that I always say to parents in my talks, if they've got a child that really likes gaming, to get on and join them, to play the game with them.
I've heard that too, yes.
And the faces that I see in the room, like I'll see some parents going, yeah, I'm already doing that, and other parents going, that just encourages them. Why would you want to do that? And I've done a poll at the end, who is going to, you know, join their kid online doing something? And the amount of parents that will not do it because they can't get over the feelings that they have about their child being on the device. And I'll often say to them, I had a whole family of boys. They all love to play soccer. I cannot stand soccer, but I was there every Saturday morning, up early, barracking from the sidelines. How many of you have done that? And lots of them will say, well, yeah, I've done that. So it's about, you're absolutely right, it's about supporting what the child wants to do and sometimes letting go of what your expectations are of what your child should be doing, not living your life through your child.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I was only listening to a podcast yesterday and the lady was talking about how it was her 17-year-old son. He's into electronic dance music and starting to make it. And she goes, I hate that music, but I showed an interest and I got him and we watched some YouTube videos together of how he learns how to make it. And because I showed an interest, our connection, our bond tightened. We suddenly got so much closer. And then he felt good that he could show me something.
Yep.
And that lifted his self-esteem because, you know, oh, mum's actually interested or at least showing interest anyway. And then what happened was the son became interested in what mum was doing.
Yeah.
And then suddenly
it actually breaks down the barriers and the walls. So even if you've got a child that is, you know, completely addicted to some kind of online game, the more you push back at that, the more you reject it, and I'm not saying that's healthy by any means, the harder those, the stronger those walls are. And if you come on board and see what it is about that thing that your child likes and open up those conversations, they'll be much more willing to listen to your point of view about the health aspects of balancing things a lot more than just retreating into that online space, I think.
It just makes logic sense. The more you resist something, the more it's going to persist. When you start to accept something and just allow and make friends with it, whatever it is, it's less intense. But the other aspect is, I think, Leonie, is what I've heard is that the importance of kids or of parents to know what their kids are playing is to play with them, but also it's the predatory stuff that happens through like Minecraft or whatever of, you know, unseedy adults joining and faking and pretending to be kids on those games. And that really frightens me. And I think when parents go, oh, I don't have anything to do with these games, they need to be aware of what's going on and they need to be in that space.
Yeah.
So they can be alert for things like that. I've heard stories of like a boy would go, oh, my best friend's I play Minecraft with. Well, have you met this person? No, I haven't met him. They're just my friend on Minecraft. Yeah. Oh, and we talk about everything. Really? Who's this friend? And it's good for parents to understand that and to go, okay, let's investigate this. Yeah. Are they really a real person or something like that? So I think that's important as well.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, and you can imagine that I talk to parents a lot about that.
Yeah.
So, Josh, have you got any new books coming up? How many books have you got now? Nine?
Nine. Okay. I've got four kids' book. I've got the fifth kids' book coming out next year. Yeah. Now, it's funny we're talking about this because that's about developing curiosity and lifelong learning. So it's about going, Okay. Yes, Generation Alpha, the primary school kids today. I'm born with a tablet in their hand. Yes, that's their device. That's their natural go-to thing. But I want to encourage them to look outside of themselves and inside themselves and let curiosity guide that. So the book is called Being a Wonder Hunter, and it's okay. Getting kids to use their senses to notice what's happening in the world around them, to use their imagination, to come up with ideas, to read more books, to do all that sort of stuff, to balance the online world. Yeah. To have them living in the real world, in IRL, in real life.
Yes.
And so then they can, so that stops that comparison. It allows them to be good and feel good about themselves. And also that self-awareness. Okay, what I'm using my senses to discover the world. Like, what am I seeing? What didn't I see before? What can I hear? You know, what new foods can I explore? Because you know what kids are like with fussiness with foods. But if they can be curious about food, oh, what's that taste like? What does Mexican food taste like? What about Korean food? Oh, that sort of thing. So to get that happening in kids, because I would love it if someone gave me a book called A Wonder Hunter as a kid, I would go, oh, mint, I want that. Thank you very much. You know, so that's coming out next year.
That sounds fantastic. Letting kids explore.
Yeah, basically, yeah.
I got both my boys enrolled in Scouts and Cubs for that. That really helped a lot with their exploring and risk-taking, healthy risk-taking and all that kind of stuff. Yep. So that was a lot of fun. That sounds amazing. So I'm going to put on the podcast, obviously, your website and where parents can get hold of the books.
Yes, yep.
And also, you know, if you're in WA at the moment and you want Josh to come speak at your school, go to the website. It sounds amazing, the work you do, and just so valuable. And it's been great talking to you, Josh, and all the best. And you're not a high school failure.
Oh, thank you. I needed to hear that back then, but thank you very much.
I've got a lot of friends that were, in your words, high school failures. And you know what, you know, parents listening to this, I think I did okay despite the dyslexia and ATAR and not going to uni and all that kind of stuff.
We all have to change the narrative, and it really is a situation where we've all got our own superpowers and we all have our own special abilities, and let's nurture them, and then that helps us feel good about who we are, and the contribution we can make to the world is amazing.
Yep. Yeah, and as they say, thinking outside of the box, which is an overused term, but it's all of that. Have a wonderful day there in WA, Josh. Stay safe, stay healthy, and I look forward to speaking to you again about your work. You're doing a fantastic job. All the best.
Thank you very much, Leonie. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for listening to the Digital Families Podcast. If you like this podcast, please leave us a review or some feedback on your YouTube or your favourite podcast app, however you're hearing us today. I'd love to hear what you think. Maybe you've got a suggestion for a potential guest. Tune in again next week for our next chat about all things digital and how it affects families.